Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-host, and with me today will be Dan Crawford from Hamian.com and Max Cohen from Cottages Confidential. This episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Sunderland at the Stadium of Light. On top of that, we have some interesting topics to discuss in the Cottage Talk roundtable to start the show. Before we do anything, though, I have to welcome my two co-hosts to the show. First, Mr. Cohen, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ross. Anticipation of a brilliant away match to Sunderland. First time you've been there in quite some time. Big 3 points on offer there. So,
absolutely. I look forward to talking to you about this huge match for Fulham at the Stadium Light on Saturday. And it's funny we're talking about the Stadium Light because our co-host, Mr. Dan Crawford, is across the street from the Stadium Light. Dan, how you doing? Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ross. Hi, Max. Good to be with you both. Yes, I appear to have got here a little bit early, and there doesn't appear to be anyone else here. So you're going to have to keep me company for a bit, lad. Nice to be with you, and looking forward to a good Fulham discussion this evening.
Okay, I am looking forward to it as well, Dan. And let's enter the Cottage Talk roundtable. I have a few different topics I want to go through with the two of you. Let's start here. So Visa, in his presser, mentioned Fulham will be without Floriete, Niskins, Cabano, and Lucas Piazon. But Piazon is back in training, which is good news. Dan, I'll start with you. How much of a loss are these players for this match against Sunderland? And does this tell us a little bit of what Savisa might do formation-wise?
I'll answer the second one first. I don't think it tells us much about what he might do and how he sets the team up. It's great news about Lucas Piazon. That's the best news.
Excellent news.
Said, didn't he? It was the best news of the week. I was involved in some news that I think was better than that, but clearly Slavisa didn't get the memo. Lucas Piazon being back and actually running around and kicking the ball and everything is brilliant. He seems to be somebody who surpasses everybody's expectations when it comes to medical diagnosis and everything. Obviously, we don't want to get too excited because he's got to do the serious full contact stuff next week after this game. But I just think somebody like Piazon adds much more quality and versatility to the squad, because if we're talking about the types of players like Cabano and Aite, whose birthday it is today, actually, happy birthday to Floyd. We're talking about Aite and Cabano. There's somebody in Piazon who could slot in for either of those players, and potentially for Tom Kearney as well, or right, play behind the striker, or absolutely, even as a striker. So I think he covers several positions. And he's also, you know, people seem to love him. Women definitely love him, and men that play football like him. So, you know, what's not to like? And the fact that he was in the away end at Griffin Park the other week, cheering on the boys, was brilliant and says everything you need to know about the kind of guy he is.
Absolutely.
Aite, well, we know that Floyd has been out for some time with a hamstring problem. I don't think he's too far away. I think the medical report that Slavisa spoke to at the press conference suggested that he could be back in contention potentially for Barnsley or maybe for Cardiff after that. And the same with Cabano, who's this one's just come a bit too quickly for him. So clearly, in the system and the way that Slavisa likes to play with two very wide wingers, it's a loss in terms of more options for the first team, but we've been playing, we've been coping without a couple of these players for a while. So,
sure.
So I think we'll be ready to try again without them tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, excellent. Max, your thoughts on these players not being available? Piazon hasn't been available, obviously, for a very long time, but I wanted to mention him because it's good news that he's back in training. Cabano came down with an injury in the last match, and hopefully he'll be back soon in Floriete. He's been out for a while. So your thoughts on these three players not being available for this match against Sunderland, what do you think? Do you think this changes anything with how Slavica approaches this. Dan doesn't seem to think so. So your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, to be completely honest, the absences of Cabano and Aite, I don't think it's going to affect Fulham very much. Just looking at it from a statistical point of view, the stats this year, Aite's had a goal and an assist. Cabano's had three goals and an assist. And we've played 21 matches in the league. It's just remarkable how little output these players are producing. Especially Aite and Cabano were pretty integral to our late season push at the end of last season. So these kind of players are underperforming, and of course you want the full squad fit, but it's not going to be a massive miss for Aite and Cabano. And I do agree with what Dan said about Piazon. He'll be massive when he gets back in the squad. First and foremost, his passion is what I think endeared him to a lot of fans. And right before he got injured, so unfortunately, against Leeds, he had that really nice impact against Reading when he scored the equalizer late on, and had scored a really nice long-range effort against Wickham in the League Cup. So he was developing a nice little run of form, and the broken leg really came at the wrong time for him. So I think when he slots back into the team, it will give us a lot more creativity, a lot more cutting edge in the final third. And as you can see with our very low amount of goals scored and the lack of creativity, that will really help the squad.
Okay, excellent. And Dan, I want to go back to you because Max just mentioned something about Piazon that I was just thinking about while he said this, passion. His passion is infectious, Dan, and I'm glad that he brought up that Reading match. Do you think we're missing someone that has that kind of passion? We have players that again, are doing a job, but Lucas Piazon just seems to really play with that passion. I know he has a lot of skill, but are we also missing a player that offers that?
I don't know. I think it's difficult to judge these things because, you know, I don't socialise with the players. I don't really know them at all. And what I would say is outward demeanour doesn't necessarily mean that people don't care or have passion.
Sure.
You know, Tom Kenny is quite a quiet, softly spoken guy, until he's engaged in conversation with Matt Smith, apparently. but you know, you wouldn't say that he lacks passion. And I always worry about that because there are people for whom, like, expressing their emotions comes easily.
Right.
And it's natural. And there are people who are more reserved characters. Let's take, for example, Marcus Bettinelli and David Button. Now, Marcus is...
That's a great comparison. Go ahead, Dan.
Outspoken guy, I think. I might get in trouble for saying this. But, you know, Marcus tends to let people know what he thinks about things, often quite loudly. David, seemingly, you know, is a bit more reserved in the way that he expresses himself, certainly on the pitch. And all I would say is, yeah, it doesn't mean that Marcus is more passionate about Fulham than David. They just express themselves differently.
That's a great way to put it, Dan.
You know, so I get what Max is. It's not to denigrate what Max has said, because it's a very good point. You know, Lucas wears his heart on his sleeve. He's comfortable with expressing his emotions. He likes playing for Fulham. That much is clear, and we love having him. But there are other people who, you know, it's easy for the fan to say, oh, I don't think they care, you know. And I'm pretty sure they all do care, especially when we get beaten, you know.
Exactly.
I'm sure the dressing room after Brentford was not a happy place. And we don't need to talk any more about that match.
Sure. No, listen, it's a good point, Dan. I'm glad that you brought up Kearney because he leads by example. And he just shows his emotion in a different way. He just is quiet, but he just does his job. And you can tell he cares. He's just not as emotional as we're talking about Piazon. So both have a role. Both are doing their jobs. I'm glad that Max brought it up because I gravitate towards, I guess you could say, the people like a Piazon. So maybe that's why I'm thinking about him. You know, I'd like to see more players like him. But I think you also need the players like a Kearney that are just out there doing their job, and they care. They're just more reserved with showing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And
oh, sorry. Go on, Matt.
Yeah, no worries. And another point I'd like to bring up, I do agree that in no way was I saying just because Piazon is passionate doesn't mean the other players don't care. But one point relating to Piazon, I think, endears him to the fans a lot, is that kind of other aspect of the modern footballer is your kind of social media presence. I think Piazza is one of those players on social media who likes to interact with the fans, who likes to, you know, like a tweet that is saying like Chelsea or Shed or Brentford or whatever. So he kind of shows the fans that he cares. And when over the summer when he's negotiating the loan, there are all these like tweets on Twitter, which were screenshots of conversations with Piazza saying, oh, I hope I can be back at Fulham. I love the club and things to the effect of that. So that's another part of his play and of his just general personality that endears himself to fans is that he's interactive on social media, which the modern supporter is going to like. And with regards to Kanye, I think, of course, he's a little more reserved on the pitch, but I think we've all seen him when he scored the equalizer against
Fulham. Oh, we know who cares.
This year, exactly. And, of course, when the Reading goal in the playoff semifinal, his passion is evident. So I think
Absolutely.
Both the players have passion just in different ways.
It's a great point, and I'm glad that we're talking about it because, again, I'm going to admit, I like players that show it, and that's why I love Piazza. But it doesn't mean that I don't appreciate what Kearney does. And I'm glad that you mentioned this, Max. He does show how much he cares in certain situations. He's focused on the job at hand when he's out there. But if he scores a goal, you're going to see the passion. And so people show it in different ways. That's why it's interesting for us to talk about it. All right, Dan, do you have anything else you want to share about that before we move on?
No, mate.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's move on. And let's talk about something that we know we're going to be talking a great deal in the month to come, and that's the January transfer window, and it's going to involve Ryan Sessegnon. So let's start here. Speculation continues with stories about Sessegnon, and one on Sunday suggests that Fulham are planning for life without Sessegnon, as reportedly the club are looking for a left back. Could it just be that they're looking for a left back so they can put Sessegnon in midfield and not being about selling Sessegnon? This is just my theory on this, Dan. You wrote something about this on handman.com. What are your thoughts about this whole situation with Sessegnon currently?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was me who wrote this piece or if it was one of my colleagues. And the two pieces, one that rather eviscerated, it depends which one you're referring to, one which rather eviscerated a newspaper. And one which went for one of the Sessegnon suitors in Tottenham and Daniel Levy, which was written by a colleague of mine called Sarah. Look, you said something, Russ, that annoyed me, which is the January transfer window is going to feature Ryan Sessegnon. Well, I hope it doesn't. I know that it will because, look, we're all people who are active in the sports media industry to some degree. You know, look, this is a classic case of, oh, you know, we need a big story to put somewhere near the front page of our football pullout. We haven't got anything. Oh, I know what we'll do. We'll say this. It's well known that Fulham are looking for a left back because, you know, Slavisa has made it clear that he would like some more left backs. And it's got something to do with Sessegnon clearly still learning about playing left back.
Right.
I'm not as down on his performances at left back as some of the other fans. We've got to remember that he's 17 years old, and he's learning that position in at a higher level than he would ever have played it before. But it's a classic case of, you know, it's in the newspaper, so therefore it must be true. And actually, there are no attributable facts. You know, 2 + 2 does not equal 5. And
I totally agree.
Sure, if someone puts a lot of money on the table, then maybe Fulham have a decision to make. But they would have had a decision to make in the summer. And Ryan Sessegnon clearly enjoying his football at Fulham.
Totally.
You know, we're very privileged to have him playing for Fulham. We're very privileged to have his brother Stephen, who's starting for the under-18s in the FA Youth Cup in about 45 minutes' time at Huddersfield. It's a very strong team, that. By the way, we're very pleased to have the Sessegnon twins and privileged to be able to watch them develop at Fulham. You know, and you look at people like Luca Della Torre and Teo Eden and a few others who are coming through as well. And for me, it's important that these young players, even though Matt O'Reilly, even though they're still very young, they can see an opportunity for them themselves in the first team. And that's the reason why both Ryan and Stephen are still at for them, because they think it's good for their development. But yeah, the January transfer window will feature a lot of stuff about Ryan Tessignon. I don't really care, because there's nothing I can do or say that is going to change the situation or what's printed in the newspaper. And most of it's rubbish.
Listen, Dan, I'm not going to disagree with you. That's why I wanted to talk about it, because I read it, and I have a strong feeling that Fulham are looking for a left back for different reasons. Listen, we still haven't seen Rafa Sora's feature except for one appearance in a match coming off the bench. You know, I think that they're looking for that combination that they had last season with Malone and Sessegnon. That's the way I look at it, Dan, that they're looking for that complementary that they can have both on the pitch at the same time, or in certain situations, just have Sessegnon a left back. But I also think it gives them the versatility by bringing in another left back to put Sessegnon in midfield.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier said than done, isn't it? You know, every team in the country and in the world probably knows that Fulham are now looking for a left back. I prefer Dennis Odoi. Much as I love Dennis, it was thoroughly stupid what he did the other week. I much prefer Dennis Odoi as a left back than a centre back or as a right back, come to think of it. So, you know, if you just play Dennis Odoi there, then you've got an option. But equally, is Ryan Sessegnon your best left winger every time against every opposition? You know, actually, it sounds slightly preposterous to put it like that after Sheffield United, where he was outstanding. But there were times where, certainly last season, he looked a little lost playing in that advanced position. But, you know, he's made remarkable strides. I think he would play wherever Slavisa wants to play him. And I think it's good that he gets a taste of various positions. But, you know, ideally, we want to see him as close to the opposition's goal or you know, providing chances as possible.
It's a great point there, Dan. And Max, I want to get you in on this, because I came out and I said I want to see him in midfield. But Dan just brought up a good point that maybe there are certain times where he's better off being left back. And Dan likes Dennis Odoi. I actually like Dennis Odoi left back. I think he's also decent at right back, backing up on Ryan Fredericks, because when he came in, he started off at right back last season. So I have no problems with Dennis Odoi left back. I just think that the club are looking for someone else, and I don't have any issue with that. And I think that's what this is about, not about replacing Ryan Sessegnon. I think that's where the article really upset me, with no substance, no quotes behind it, no one attributed to it, you know, like no sources. That's the part that bothers me about this, Dan, is that it just says Fulham are looking for a left back. Well, what is that based on? Who are they talking to? And there's nothing in that article, and that's what bothered me. That's why I wanted to talk about it. Max, your thoughts on all this with Ryan Sessegnon?
Yeah, first of all, I mean, we just have to take that report, as Dan mentioned, on hemian.com. It's from The Sun, so that's really all you need to know about the credibility of that source. I think we can leave it at that. At the same time, I think that the fact that we're talking about Ryan Sessegnon and we're having this conversation about whether he's better as a winger or more of a left back, it's just remarkable how much versatility Ryan has as a 17-year-old. Very few players, I think, as a senior player can have that kind of versatility in playing two positions well. And Sessegnon, who's not even 18 yet, already has that in his repertoire, which is impressive. I do believe he is more effective in a more advanced position. But that being said, I think it's a good point to make that there are some matches when he's more suited to play left back than he is to play winger. I would like to see him at the same light on the wing in a more attacking position, because I believe in the away matches in the counter-attacking style we're probably going to play, I think that is how you use Ryan the most effectively, as we saw against Sheffield United at Bramall Lane. So I think it's a good conundrum to have for Slavisa, but the fact that we're looking for left backs, I think, is pretty independent of what the future of Sessegnon holds, because I think it's clear that we do need a proper left back, as Slavisa obviously doesn't trust Suarez or Sessegnon 100% to have them as a starter every single match.
Okay, excellent there, Max. And I just want to mention this because someone sent an article to me, again from The Sun, talking about how Ryan Sessegnon and his brother just joined Unique Sports Management, along with their existing management team, are now part of Unique Sports Management. And is that a sign that something's going on with Ryan and his brother? And I don't think so. Again, that's just my opinion. This is a very good management team. Tom Kearney is signed to this management team, along with Teo Eden, Dwight Gale, Oliver Norwood. These players are all part of Unique Sports Management. So I wouldn't read too much into them joining this sports management firm. I think it's a good sports management firm. So I don't see 1 + 1 = 3. I don't see it. I just don't see it. Anyways, just wanted to mention that as well. All right, guys, let's move on. And Dan, I want to go to you because you were part of the Fulham Supporters Trust that just met with the club, and we're going to talk about some of the notes. But before we do that, I want you to just to discuss a little bit about the Fulham Supporters Trust signing a memorandum of understanding with Fulham Football Club. I had on Tom and Chris last week. They were fantastic. I enjoyed talking to them about the Supporters Trust and all the great work that you guys do. I'm a member, so always like talking about the Fulham Supporters Trust. But I think this is a significant situation, Dan. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. Just if you could kind of summarize exactly what this means.
Oh, that's hard, because the memorandum of understanding runs to quite a few pages. In all seriousness, we're very pleased as a Supporters Trust to be able to be in a position that we didn't think we would ever be in. I think Tom and Chris last week, was it last week?
Yes.
Sorry, nearly it's Christmas and it was my birthday this week, so all the weeks are sort of molding into one. Tom and Chris last week spoke about how the trust was formed and the positions that Fulham fans have been in historically, over Craven Cottage and other issues. And so when the trust was formally constituted as a trust, we weren't expecting to be in this position. I think what's important from the outset is to say that the trust is wholly independent of Fulham Football Club. Okay? You know, it is a body that is governed by its members and is set up to represent supporters. Now, what that actually means is largely determined by our membership in terms of what they say. But we were presented with an opportunity to meet with Fulham Football Club on a monthly basis after an offer from Alistair McIntosh, the chief executive, 3 years ago. Since then, the leagues, the Premier League and the English Football League, have introduced a requirement that clubs should meet with the fans twice a season as a starting point to try and get some dialogue between clubs and fans, because unfortunately a lot of clubs are run by people who, you know, in some cases should be in jail. In other cases, certainly shouldn't be running any kind of business, and then certainly shouldn't be running a football club because they're just so bad at it.
Right.
Fortunately, we're not in that position at Fulham, and we've had an opportunity to discuss things regularly with the club through these monthly meetings. And as we've been able to say to the club, yes, we're independent, but we will articulate what you're saying to the supporters and begin a dialogue around several issues, then Mr. McIntosh felt able to suggest to some of his colleagues that they join the meetings and that they are a sounding board for ideas that the club is coming up with and ideas that supporters have as well. So this memorandum of understanding, to be very specific, commits the club to holding a regular meeting. It commits key representatives, decision makers at the club attending that meeting. And it formalises everything that we've done informally.
Right.
For the last 3 years. It's the first such agreement in British football based on some guidance drawn up by Supporters Direct, who are the sort of national umbrella group of supporters trusts. Now, given where the trust came from, there will be criticism, and I see that some of it has already appeared online, that, you know, this type of arrangement means that the trust is too close or too cosy with Fulham Football Club. I can only speak for myself, and I can say to you, Russ, you know me, yep. There isn't a situation where I would not ask a question because I was told not to. In fact, were I told not to, it would make me more more likely to ask it. And
oh, I know you.
I was about to say the departed Sarah Brooks, which probably is too strong, but you know, were you able to get Sarah to join this podcast?
Yep.
Then Sarah could tell you that we often table the difficult questions. And it's our job in these notes of the meeting to express what was said in
right.
the meeting. That doesn't mean that, say, for example, on Fulham Football Club participating in the Checker Trade Trophy, a completely farcical competition and a total waste of time, doesn't mean that we agree with them. So, you know, it's very important to say that this memorandum of understanding is good. It shows that the club is willing to engage in dialogue, and it solidifies it, because at the moment it's on the whim of Mr. McIntosh, Mr. Khan, and various other people. Now it's going to be a established forum. It's not a contract, but it commits both parties to certain principles, sharing of information, and working together where we can to deliver things that are mutually beneficial to Fulham supporters.
I think it's very significant, Dan. That's why I wanted to talk about it and you explained about it. I know there's so many details with it, but I thought you did a very good job of just breaking down exactly what the memorandum of understanding is about. Max, I want to get your thoughts on all this. We've talked about the Fulham Supporters Trust and their relationship with Fulham Football Club. Now it's been solidified. I think this is very significant. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is obviously a very positive move that the club's been taking with the Supporters Trust, obviously, having the initiative here. It really goes a long way to preventing situations like we've seen at Blackpool, Portsmouth, another example, or just Leyden Orient, when the clubs and the fans have these kind of disconnects that lead to really disasters for the clubs in general. And I think things like the memorandum of understanding and the positive work the Supporters Trust has been doing just goes a really long way to preventing things like that from happening, and to really just promoting dialogue, the open transmission of information, so the fans and the club are really on the same page, and that Fulham Football Club continues to be a sustainable really club for a long time to come. And that's really what it's all about, is that we might not be in the Premier League now, but we're still going to interact with our fans, we're still going to keep them up to date with information, and we're still going to be a sustainable club, and that's what's most important right now.
I totally agree there, Max. All right, thank you, Dan, for explaining about that. One last thing I want to discuss, this actually comes from the notes that you can actually get on FulhamSupportersTrust.com from the December meeting with Fulham Football Club. I'm just going to read an excerpt from it so we can just talk about it briefly, because I know fans are already thinking about the January transfer window, and here's a piece from the notes. So I'm just going to read it. Here it is: playing matters and the January transfer window. Alistair McIntosh told the Trust representatives that despite the desperate disappointment of the Derby defeat to Brentford, morale and belief remained high amongst the first team squad following three league wins out of four, including two clean sheets at home. Alistair McIntosh confirmed that recruitment is well underway for the January window, led by Director of Football Tony Khan and his interim assistant James Lovell, in consultation with head coach Slavisa Jokanovic, who, as his recent program notes detailed, has already identified a number of potential signings who could immediately strengthen the first team squad. Alistair McIntosh reiterated that club would have significant funds with which to support the head coach during the January transfer window, and that the club's recruitment policy would remain the same as had been outlined during the Trust November meeting. All right, Dan, thoughts on this part of the notes? Obviously, you're part of the Trust. Your thoughts about the January transfer window here?
It's difficult for me, Russ, because the notes are a summary of the discussion, and to be honest, being one of the people in the room, the note that was what was said. Now, you know, the January transfer window is something that the club will have a number of targets that they will go after, and we will see what happens. I don't think it's any secret to say that January is a difficult time, notoriously difficult time to acquire players. You know, I'm trying to think of the last January window where Fulham did really well. And, you know, I'm thinking of Nevland and Hangeland. And probably before that, there was a certain Clint Dempsey who arrived in the January window. And before that, there was a certain Brian McBride. I'm skipping over, clearly, several other players. But the difficulty is that it's quite clear, I think, where Fulham wants to strengthen. The interesting thing is that we don't get an opportunity to speak to Slavisa during these meetings because he's concentrating on the training sessions quite often. And, you know, I would much rather Slavisa spends his time training the players than talking to people like me. You know, that's a no-brainer. But it's interesting. Slavisa wrote in the programme before the game against Birmingham and reiterated, I think, in the press conference yesterday that, you know, he has a firm idea of the types of footballers that he wants to bring in. They have... those ideas have been communicated to Tony Khan and to James Lovell. And I think what will be interesting is there is a hidden dynamic in this, is that Craig Klein, and it's well documented, is obviously no longer at the football club. That may make it easier. The key thing, of course, is that the transfer policy, recruitment policy, remains the same. So it's not a conventional British-style recruitment policy where the manager has total control. But I think you'd be mad to, with the amount of money that people can put down in these windows, to give manager total control of everything. The transfer window, I understand why you've picked that as a section. What I would say to you is, the discussion about the Riverside Stand and the fact that the club has formally put in that planning application, and that there are a lot of, you know, there are 201 documents publicly available, all about the Riverside Stand and Craven Cottage and what's potentially going to be provided if that planning application is successful. And there are lots of things related to that that, for me, are a little more, the fans will have more influence over that than they will the transfer window, because I can't predict what other teams are going to do in the transfer window. And of course, when you're trying to buy players, what other teams do is integral to the process, because many teams will say in January, well, maybe we'll sell you this player, but we'll have to wait until we've got a replacement, which I think is what happened with Dwight Gale.
Okay, excellent there.
In the summer, sorry.
Right. No, excellent, Dan. And listen, I'm glad that you brought up the Riverside Stand development project. The reason why I focused on this is that I did talk to Chris a decent amount on the show I did about the Fulham Supporters Trust, where we talked about the plan being underway. And so that's why I focused on the January transfer window. But I'm glad that you did bring up the Riverside development plan, because fans should read about that as well, along with the other parts of the notes, because there's a good amount here. I read them every single time I get an email about it. And then, of course, I can go right to the FulhamSupportersTrust.com and read all the meeting notes. I highly recommend you doing that. But I thought it would just be good to discuss this, Dan, just because I know fans are interested in what the club is thinking about the January transfer window. Obviously, they're not going to tell you targets, and no one expects that. But I was just wanted to mention, I was curious about that the transfer policy that they have in place is still what it is, but also that they have already said, Alistair McIntosh said to you, that they have funds available. And just hearing those words, I think, is important. That was one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it. Max, your thoughts about all this?
Yeah, you know, we've talked a lot about the transfer policy in past shows. And it's frustrating to see sometimes when Slavisa sounds off about not having control. But having said that, he's been pretty quiet about it in recent times. Of course, remember in the spring, in the summer area, he really was very outspoken about his dislike of the transfer policy. And that dissent has seemed to go down in recent times. So maybe there's a more of acceptance on his end. And also it seems that with Klein being out and now Lovell taking his replacement, he seems to be much more respected among the club and a much more agreeable figure than Klein. So that can only be positive, in my opinion. Hopefully we can get some impact signings in January. But as Dan mentioned, and as I've said in the past, and of course a lot of people have said, the January transfer window is never a great time to buy players. We've had very mixed success. And I just like to point to last season's January transfer window, where our two loan signings, I think Syriac and Petsos, were just basically completely ineffective and just a waste of time. So just take that with a grain of salt. And in addition, you mentioned Dwight Gale.
Yep.
It's looking like a big loss now. I mean, obviously it was always a long shot to get him, but now with him scoring quite a bit of goals in the Premier League recently, he scored away at Old Trafford, scored a couple of goals at St. James Park in the past couple weeks as well. He looks like a great striker. Imagine what having Gale in this team would have done for our chances this season. So many more chances would have been put away, so many more goals. So it's always tough to look back on what we missed, but hopefully we can get the targets we want and they'll have an impact.
Okay, excellent there, Max. Great discussions in the Cottage Talk Roundtable, but I'm ready to start previewing this upcoming match against Sunderland. And before we really get into the matchup, Dan, I want to start with you talking a little bit about some former Fulham managers and players that are now at Sunderland. So what are your thoughts on Chris Coleman taking over Sunderland as their manager and Kit Simons being there with them?
Oh, I love Chris Coleman. So it's very difficult for me to be objective about this. I'll just tell you that I came into Sunderland not long ago and was rushing in order to make sure I was available for you, Russ, because, you know, I didn't want to let you down.
Thank you.
Up a copy. You're very welcome, of course. You know, I picked up a copy of the Sunderland Echo, and Chris Coleman is on the front page, not for footballing reasons. He's on the front page because he's gone to Sunderland Royal Hospital to do Christmas visits with terminally ill or seriously ill children, and he took the whole Sunderland squad with him. And on page 2 and 3, there's a big interview with Chris Coleman, where he says, and I'll quote a little bit from it, if you don't mind, Russ.
Go ahead.
I think it is a bit of reality for us. We've been to 3 hospitals today in Sunderland, Durham and Newcastle, and the welcome they've given us is amazing. It has been very humbling, to be honest. I have to thank all the families and all the staff. They've been great. There's a rather fetching picture of Kit Simons in a blue Christmas jumper. And he said that Coleman's quote continues, it's good for the players to get out and put smiles on some of these young, brave young people's faces. Football is a sheltered and guarded world. We live a bit of an unrealistic bubble. So Chris Coleman's on the front of the newspaper. He's also on the back, which is where the sport starts. And then it says, Coleman can end the home curse. And it talks in quite some detail over several pages about how you know, Chris Coleman and, of course, Kit Simons will know an awful lot about Fulham.
Sure.
And that's really to where I wanted to go. You know, both of these guys played well over 200 games for Fulham. In Chris's case, his career was horribly cut short, really, just as he was about to lead Fulham back into the Premier League, and to such an extent, a very serious car accident where the surgeon at the side of the road was about to amputate his leg. And they sort of got Chris conscious and able to speak, and they said, "Mr. Coleman, I'm going to amputate your leg. What is it that you do?" And Chris Coleman would say, "I'm a footballer." And they thought, right, well, we better not do that then. And another course of action was taken. It was very sad at the time because Coleman was clearly the best centre-back outside the Premier League, as he had been for some time. He dropped down two divisions to join Fulham. And he became the heartbeat of the club. And then, of course, after coming back from that injury to play once more for Wales against Germany, who were then the world champions at the Millennium Stadium, he went into coaching to learn coaching, and Fulham sacked Jean Tigana, and suddenly Chris Coleman was the first team manager, I guess what you would call an interim first team manager.
Right.
And he was so good at it that he made it very difficult for anyone else to be given the job. And several top names were interviewed or earmarked for the job, and it went to Chris Coleman. And I know that by the end of his time at Fulham, the football was quite dire, and it looked like he'd run out of ideas. But you have to remember that Chris Coleman took Fulham to what was then their highest league finish of ninth in the Premier League. We beat Arsenal at home, Manchester United away, and of course Chelsea at home, Russ, with a goal from Luis Bamonte, and a day that no Fulham fan will ever forget. And for all of that and so many other things, Chris Coleman is one of football's good guys. And then you get onto the side of this, which is, I suppose, quite surprising, which is that Coleman left the Welsh job to take over at Sunderland.
Were you surprised by this, Dan?
I mean, I've written, I assume you haven't read it yet, Russ, but I've written a piece this afternoon.
Okay.
It's gone up this afternoon. I wrote it last night. All about Chris Coleman and Sunderland. And I wasn't surprised by this because Cookie, as he's universally known, has always been somebody who likes a challenge, likes to prove himself. So when he was sacked by Fulham, he took a little bit of time off, and then he went to Real Sociedad, who'd been relegated from the Liga and were in the second division in Spain, and his job was to try and get them back. It didn't work. He went to Larissa, he went to Coventry City, and clearly he had enough of being undervalued by the Football Association of Wales and wanted a new challenge. And he took on Sunderland, which it's not because I'm in the glorious city and enjoying their wonderful hospitality, but this is a football mad region, like no other place really in England. And Sunderland is a massive football club, you know, make no mistake about that. But many people have thought that they could do it under Ellis Short, and it hasn't happened. But Coleman already has had a bit of an impact in terms of Sunderland had been disastrous, much like we were when we came down from the Premier League. Russ, you remember we had a crazy manager at that time.
I think it's very similar situations with both clubs,
yeah,
Dan.
Yeah, and it's a very strange league, really, still even now. There's always a couple of results that you're like, really? Did I hear that right? really? Have they beaten them? You know, every week. And then we
every
get
week,
on to the referees.
Every week.
Then we get on to the referees almost every week as well.
I have to ask you about him. I'm glad that you reminded me about that. I'm going to ask you about the referee for this match. We have to talk about that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, we do.
I don't even know who it is.
Okay.
So you can remind me later on. But I've talked
will,
for long
I
enough
leave,
about.
I will leave that for the end, Dan. That will be
I've
a,
talked long enough about Chris Coleman. I should say something about Kit Simons, which is
please
I think
do.
In
Go
time,
ahead.
I think in time people will realise or come to give Kit Simons a little more credit than he currently gets, because he was a very successful youth team coach at Fulham. People forget that it was Kit Simons who gave Marcus Bettinelli his first league start for Fulham. It was Kit Simons who introduced Moussa Dembélé into the senior side on a more regular basis. It was Kit Simons who decided that Lars-Vigen Christiansen was ready for senior football when probably nobody else would have picked him. Simons was also responsible for, he was the manager when Tom Kenny came to the football club. And I think he was in that classic position, much like Cookie actually, of being promoted into a job and earning it by virtue of the very strong performances that he got at the start of his temporary reign, as it were. You remember we had a 5-man committee and they decided against me on Simons. And he probably didn't get the level of support that some other managers have had. And he was learning as he's in his first job. But I just think the totality of what Kit Simons has done for this, for our football club, 1-2 promotions, you know, never let anybody down on the field, played an integral part in promoting a lot of talent and helping it reach the highest level, and then managed the football club through some turbulent periods of time and also kept us in the Championship, which at one point did not look likely when we were, you know, what, 2 points after however many games it was when they got rid of Felix. So I think we would need to come to some sort of analysis of Simon's time at the football club that would be a little fairer to somebody who still has Fulham in his heart, even if he's not going to be too bothered if we lose tomorrow.
It's a great point, Dan. I'm glad that you didn't just focus on Chris Coleman, that you also mentioned Kit. And I think Kit did a job for us, keeping us in the league. And again, as a player, totality, I hope over time we look at him as a full man, exactly who he is. Again, it didn't end great, but I mean, overall, like you said, he has Fulham in his heart and he should be thought of that way. And he had the best intentions for Fulham. And like I said, that beginning stages with him in charge, he kept us in the league. And that's something that I'll always be thankful for him for. And I do wish him the best in future endeavors, obviously at Sunderland. But tomorrow, you know, we obviously are hoping Fulham do the job on his team along with Chris Coleman. All right. Guys, let's move on. Let's get into this. And Max, I'm going to start with you just to get us going. Got some information from you from whoscored.com just on team characteristics of Sunderland, just to get a feel for what they're all about. Let's just start where both teams are on the table. Fulham are currently 12th with 7 victories, 8 draws, 6 losses. We've scored 27. We've given up 27. So there is 0 goal differential and are on 29 points. Sunderland have 2 victories, 9 draws, 10 losses. They've scored 26, but they've given up 38. They're on a minus 12 goal differential and are on 15 points. And this information, Max, is from whoscored.com. Just want to get your thoughts on it, just to describe what this team is about according to them. Strengths for Sunderland, very strong at stealing the ball from the opposition, strong at coming back from losing positions. Their weaknesses, defending against long shots, defending set pieces, aerial duels, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas. They're very weak at avoiding individual errors and defending against attacks down the wings. Their style of play, Max, play with width, attacking down the right, rotate their first 11. They're aggressive, and they play in their own half. All right, Max, thoughts on Sunderland heading into this match?
Yeah, the one thing that jumps out for me that's most pertinent, I think, for the coming matches is that they rotate the first 11. Of course, having with Coleman having come into the squad, he's going to change things up. So maybe what we saw 2 weeks ago is not the same thing we're going to see tomorrow. And even just looking at the last couple lineups in the previous two matches, both under Coleman, we had such a different lineup with regards to the Wolves match versus the Reading match. So they like to play different styles. Coleman's obviously trying to find his preferred first 11. And we don't really know what we're going to get from them, which is, I think, a bit of a wild card. And Slavisa, I think, mentioned that, and so did Tim Ream in their interview, saying that we don't really know what some of them are going to turn up like, and that might be the element of surprise that might throw us off a tad bit. That being said, they do like to switch up their 11, forced because of red cards. Lee Cattermole against Wolves, of course, got his sending off. I mean,
he's out.
Contract. He's contractually obligated to be sent off at least 3 times a year, I believe. as well as in the Reading match, you have Callum McManaman sent off. So they're not disciplined. They've only won 2 times this year, but they've just come off drawing Wolves, and not many teams can keep Wolves to a clean sheet. So lot of different signals, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, excellent there, Max. All right. Dan, I'm going to go to you. I just want to just share some information from Get West London. Talk about players that will not be available for Sunderland for this match. This article was by Scott Trott. I'm just going to read a little bit for you. Dan, just so we have some injury and suspension information about Sunderland. Fulham's hosts have a number of injuries going into this weekend's fixture, and also without Lee Cattermole, who is serving a suspension after getting sent off in Sunderland's draw with Wolves. Coleman will also select his team without Paddy McNair, Brian Oviedo, and Billy Jones. This weekend does not mark the return of winger Callum McManaman after a suspension, and Didier Endong is back in contention after a knee injury. All right, Dan, over to you. Want to get your thoughts on Sunderland in general? What should we expect from Chris Coleman's club here? And players that you're concerned about heading into this match for Fulham?
Well, so just the one thing, I'm not sure, I haven't read the Get West London piece, but the newspapers up here, Coleman gave his press conference this afternoon.
Okay.
They're pretty confident that Callum McManaman is going to play.
Okay.
And is fit. And, of course, Callum McManaman played a starring role in the FA Cup win for Wigan Athletic over Manchester City. Gosh, that must have been a long time ago. Apologies to the many Wigan Athletic fans who will be tuning into this podcast. But
2013, I think?
Yeah, that's where I was going.
Yeah,
that's
they went down
going, Max. Yeah.
And won the cup in the same year. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And, you know, there are still plenty of people apparently who stopped Steve Sidwell and tell him that it was a terrific goal. Because apparently he looks an awful lot like Ben Watson. but anyway, sorry, that's just an interesting aside. Callum McManaman expected to play for Sunderland, but I have to agree with Max here in that I don't think we're particularly sure what kind of side Coleman's going to put out. He's very strong on wanting his players to give him absolutely everything, which they did at Wolves last weekend. It's quite a remarkable result, given that Cattermole, I'm quite glad that Cattermole isn't playing in this game on Saturday, because he can sort of break people in half with his tackling. And if we thought Dennis Adoy was a little bit rash the other week, you know, Cattermole gets booked twice in 60 seconds. You know, they were bad fouls, but I was still surprised that a championship referee did know the laws and was prepared to enforce them in that way. So the interesting thing about Sunderland then, I guess, is how are they going to line up? Coleman puts the ex-Manchester United defender, midfielder, Donald Love, as a right back. Against Wolves, and he was terrific. Gooch, the American, in midfield, looked really strong, and he obviously, Russ and Max, you'll know more about him than me, but I've always been impressed with
with him as a young talent. And Adam Matthews, who was once linked with a move to Fulham quite heavily, was very good at left wing back. So such an extent that even with 10 men Wolves, even against 10 men Wolves, didn't really force much against against Sunderland in terms of shots the goalkeeper had to save. The players who I'd be worried about, well, there's one who didn't even get on the pitch last weekend. That's Aidan McGeady.
I was going to say, I'm concerned if he plays. I'm glad that you brought him up, Dan. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to be a bit more than concerned, Russ. Like, I'll be terrified because he's one of the league's best players. And, you know, I'm going to apologise to Ryan O'Donovan here because I'm going to offend him. But in a very average Republic of Ireland side, McGeady is still probably arguably a world-class player. And then you've got Lewis Grabban up front.
11 goals.
Who will score goals, Ross, yes.
Yep.
The key for Sunderland is obviously getting the ball to him more regularly in places where he can hurt the opponents. But, you know, you look at Sunderland's squad, and I think Max alluded to it, they're a far better side than their points total suggests. So, you know, I really don't think they're going to be languishing at the bottom of the table for too much longer.
Totally,
and I am actually very concerned because we do tend to be very generous and play teams into form. And indeed, the last time that Sunderland hadn't won for nearly a calendar year, we turned up and Sunderland beat us. So, and who was the manager for Fulham then? It was Chris Coleman. So, there's a certain deja vu that is troubling me at the moment.
Okay, excellent there, Dan. All right, Max, over to you.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
Your key players for this match, Max. Sorry.
Yeah, just to what Dan just said before,
sure.
They do have a strong core, a Premier League caliber core of the side. You have Darren Gibson, Lee Cadamore, obviously not going to be involved, but John O'Shea and Lewis Grabban, along with McManaman and McGee, these are Premier League quality players. It's a strong side. So just keep that in mind. And as well, last time we played Sunderland at home, I believe, that was in our relegation campaign, and they thrashed us 4-1. One of the worst performances I think the Fulham side put in during that very, very poor 2013-14 season. Moving on to key players. For Sunderland or for Fulham, Russ?
For Fulham.
For Fulham, all right. Key players for Fulham, I'm going to go with Ryan Sessegnon. We've talked a lot about him earlier on in the podcast, and I think he will be the difference. He really he loves playing up north, as he showed at Sheffield United, and I think he'll put in a really good performance if they play him in that attacking left-wing position, which I think Slavisa will. I think he's due for a couple of goals here. He did it last season near in the Stadium of Light. Sorry, at St. James's Park, and I think he can do it at Stadium of Light this time around.
Okay, excellent there, Max. All right. Guys, before I go to your starting 11 in prediction, Dan, I'm going to go back to you. Now it's time to talk about the ref. Dan, the ref for this match is Stephen Martin. You might remember him from the Burton Albion match. Thoughts on the ref?
I don't have any thoughts on the ref.
Okay.
I don't because, you know, serious people listen to this podcast and, you know, I don't want to get in trouble.
Very good, Dan. I love that. All right. Guys, let's get into this. Let's go to starting 11. Dan, I'll start with you. I want your starting 11, not what Savisa is going to do. What would you do if you were him playing against Sunderland?
Okay. Ben Ali in goal. Fredericks, Kalas, Ream, Adoy, McDonald, Norwood, Kearney, Sessegnon, Ojo, and Kamara.
Okay, so you're leaving Johansson out?
I am leaving Johansson out, yeah.
Okay. Max, how about you? Do you agree with Dan starting 11 for this match, or do you have a different one?
The one change I would make, I know it's a bit of an unpopular one. I just think Font has to start instead of Kamara. I do think this would be a good opportunity to utilize Kamara from the start, but I just think he will be more effective coming off the bench. And I just think Rui Font, listen, I know a lot of fans have given him a lot of stick, and rightly so. I just don't think we can give up on him just yet. I still believe that his quality in the end will show through. And if you want a striker to get confidence, you have to start him. And I think this is the match where he'll come good, finally.
Okay.
I just think you got to give him the start from the off and hopefully get him a goal that will build up his confidence.
Okay, so you're going with Font. Dan, what are your thoughts about Max going with Font instead of Camara?
I can do it. Look, I very nearly went for Font myself. So I hadn't really given it much thought until you asked me the question. So I went with Camara for the, no, honestly, generally, because, you know, I don't try to think about what team I would pick.
Sure.
Because the issue you've got is, Max is absolutely right. Camara is the type of person you bring on for half an hour bursts because, you know, there are, you know, very few players will have ever defended against somebody who runs in that fashion, who is physical and, you know, wants to shoot and yet can still do all these flicks and fancy things. You know, I saw Font at Ipswich. Font was fantastic. And it's a confidence thing. I thought he was excellent off the bench on Saturday against Birmingham. Really, really good. But if Font is going to play, he has to play in the 18-yard box. I don't want him sort of, you know, out on the wing, out on the other wing.
I agree, Dan.
Playing totally the number 10. He can finish, but he's been too busy, presumably under instruction, linking the play and doing everything, but being far too far away from the opposition's goal to do what we want him to do, which is finish inside the 18-yard box. So no, I don't, you know, if Slavica plays Font, I'm very happy with that because okay. Max makes the point, you know, we don't want to give up on Marouane Font.
I agree.
You know, We can't. He's clearly a quality footballer, and also, you know, I don't think rightly so. I know what Max is saying. You know, rightly so that Fulham fans have given Ruth on to a bit of stick. Well, no, you know, a wise man once said it takes a foreign player 18 months to settle in English football. That was Arsene Wenger talking about Thierry Henry, because, you know, both of you all know Thierry Henry didn't have the best of starts in English football, and neither did Sylvain Wiltord. And then they became part of that invincible Arsenal side that couldn't beat Fulham at Highbury.
Okay, excellent. Dan, one final question before we get to predictions, because both of you left Johansson out. I want to get your thoughts because you obviously are right there. What have you made of Johansson playing his role the last two matches?
I don't understand it, so I'd like somebody to explain it to me because Steph Joe is a terrific footballer. He's a lovely man, and this week they signed that deal. I don't know if you saw it, Ross.
I did see it.
At the Norwegian Embassy in London, where Stephen Johansson, as captain of the male Norwegian side, committed that his female counterpart, who plays for a team who we won't mention, will be put, the female Norwegian players will be paid the same amount of money, and until such time as the Norwegian FA can fund that themselves, the male players will be handing over, will be making a contribution. So that was terrific. I just think that Stefan Johansson is clearly struggling for form and fitness, and if he needs an operation or some time off, give him that time off, because he's far better at 100% effectiveness. So if that means he's on the bench on tomorrow and with the potential to come on, or if that means he's sitting in the stand somewhere. You know, I also think, like, a lot of people coated Ollie Norwood at the start of the season, you know, and he's been pretty solid for us.
Yes, I totally agree, Dan.
The last few games. And you know what? He can take a penalty, and he can take a free kick, and he seems to be able to take a corner, you know. So and you put all those three things together, and there aren't many Fulham players who can say that.
Dan, I'm glad that you brought it up, because I think it's underrated the job, especially recently, that Oliver Norwood has done. You've broken up some of his attributes so far that we've seen just recently. So I have no issue with Oliver Norwood playing in it. I'm a big Stefan Johansson fan, but I agree with you. I have no issue with him not being in the lineup tomorrow. If they were to go with either one of the lineups, Savisa went, that you guys both suggested, either Kamara or Fon, I have no issue with that. And maybe he needs a game or two to rest and then get back to full fitness, because obviously a little while ago he was struggling with an injury. Maybe he's still dealing with that. Who knows? So, you know, I think this is a perfect opportunity to rest him a little bit and to play one of the strikers. So, I'm there with you, Dan. All right, let's go to predictions for this match. Let me start with the predictions on the Cutters Talk Twitter poll that I did earlier today. I had 112 votes. Win was at 57%. Draw was at 18%. And loss was at 25%. All right, I'll pull up the Facebook page votes in 1 second. But before I do that, Max, I'll go to you. What is your prediction for this match?
I'm going to go for a narrow Fulham win. I'm going to say Sunderland 1, Fulham 2. It's not going to be pretty, but we're going to get the 3 points, get the job done. And that's all that matters at this point in the season. And we're not going to let Sunderland get the first home win in over a year.
Okay, excellent there, Max. All right. I now have the results of the Cottage Talk Facebook page poll. And win was at 69%. Loss was at 31%. That was out of 172 votes. Unfortunately, draw was not an option, but I had a couple of people write in. Draw, Elliot Croft said draw. Stephen FFC Collins said draw. Roger Pink just said this. With no quality or composure up front, I think Coleman will turn us over and get their first home win. So Roger is actually picking a Sunderland victory. All right, Dan, up to you. What is your prediction?
Yeah, I've got a terrible feeling that Roger's going to be right. Because, you know, based on all this, I know we've got all these statistics and,
sure,
and whatever, but, you know, and I just worry about Sunderland having had a good result and a lot of people are writing them off. You know, not Slavisa Kanovic, not the sensible Fulham fans, but, you know, it's going to be a battle tomorrow. Fulham are going to have to earn the right to play, and they're going to have to be clinical, which we haven't been for some time now. And we have to be tight at the back. And yes, we've done that at home, but, you know, the last time we went away from home, we were atrocious defensively. And I think the way that Slavisa sets out the team with the fullback pushing forward and with this emphasis on passing the ball even in our own defensive third, not that I disagree with it, I love watching it because it's fantastic to watch, but it also gives the other team a chance. No. And, you know, Sunderland can't keep playing terribly. They've already improved massively to get that point against Wolves, and I think they're going to win tomorrow.
Okay.
I'll go for the reverse of Max's scoreline, which is 2-1 to Sunderland, because I think Fulham can score, but I'm just worried about some of the defensive frailties that have certainly been on display against Millwall, against Brentford, and even against Birmingham, because, you know, if Boga had been not watching the Fulham penalty shootout video compilation from last season and actually concentrating on how to take a proper penalty, then we wouldn't have had 3 points against Birmingham.
That's a good point, Dan. Listen, I understand why you're picking Sunderland, and I don't blame you for picking Sunderland. I'm going back and forth while you guys are talking about what I'm going to do with my prediction. And I think the Wolves draw just showed me a great deal about Sunderland, and in a very short period of time, what Chris Coleman and Kit Simons are doing there. They're making them difficult to beat. And to hold that team with 10 men at one point, that's an accomplishment. And they should be respected. And I'm glad that you mentioned, Dan, that obviously the players and Slavisa respect the opponent. I respect the opponent. I think it's a dangerous game. I see the talent that they still have. You talked about the talent that they have, Dan. And I fear him playing Aidan McGeady, because I remember when he has played against Fulham, he's been very dangerous. And then you still have Lewis Graben up front scoring 11 goals. So they have someone that has the ability to score the goals and take advantage of the frailties you talked about, Dan. So I'm actually going to go right in the middle. I'm going to sit on the fence, and I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. I'm being gutless here, Dan. I'm sorry. I'm going to go for the 1-1 draw. So I'm just, you know, I think this match can go all three different ways. There's no question about it. But I'm going to play it safe. I'm usually don't, but I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to say 1-1. You know, I very easily could have picked a loss here, but I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. All right. Guys, fantastic show. Great show. Max, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ross. It's always such a pleasure to be on the show. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's always superb to have some great film discussion. It was lovely having Dan on, a great perspective, and Hamian's a brilliant website for Fulham News, so I love it.
It's great, and I just want to mention, because I've gotten several requests to have both of you on, and I want to mention that. Max, I've had people message me that they love having you on and looking forward to hearing you again. And Dan, I keep getting people telling me the same thing. When are you going to have Dan Crawford back on? So I just want to mention that. I know he tweeted that out, but I'm being honest when I tell you, it just shows how good you are, not just on the show, what a great writer you are, and just a great supporter you are of Fulham Football Club. Thank you so much for joining Max and I today.
A pleasure, Russell. Unfortunately, I am now going to have to pay the bribes to all those people who wrote to you. because that wasn't meant to be public. But, you know, I need to boost my credibility in some way. Look, it was great to do the show with
Thank
John
you.
And Max today. I really enjoyed it. Can I just say Merry Christmas to everybody.
Absolutely.
Happy Hanukkah to everybody as well. And if I can say a special Merry Christmas to the members of the Fulham Curry Club. They all know who they are, and they're all avid listeners of this podcast. And Merry Christmas to you, Russ, and to Max, and all Fulham fans. Let's hope we get 3 points tomorrow. Come on, you won't.
All right, excellent there, Dan. All right. Thank you so much for joining me, both of you. But it is time to go. For Max Cohen from Cottagers Confidential and Dan Crawford from Hamian.com, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.